Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Attract podcast with your host, Anna Rumbold. In this episode, I interview award-winning marketer, writer, and brand strategist, Susanna Baker-Bui. I loved this conversation. We talked about owning what it is that you do and bringing that to the table in your marketing and otherwise. And Susanna shared some really brilliant tips to help you to share your message with unwavering conviction. Let's dive in. Hi, Susanna, and welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to speak with you today about your business, but also about communicating a message when we have a tendency to overthink and people please. And it's a topic I'm really passionate about, so I can't wait to dive in with you. First off, I'd love to hear a little bit about your story and what it is you do today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I love this conversation. It is one that I would say most people that come to me because they said, hey, I see that you say that you talk to people pleasers, and that's me. I felt like you were speaking directly to me on your website. And so something that I originally started talking about just because it was a lot of my story became something that I realized was definitely a topic that needed to be discussed further. So a little bit of my background. I actually have 2 degrees, one in journalism and mass media communications and one in theater. So storytelling has always been kind of a part of who I am. And that ended up with me in New York City working in sales and corporate marketing for some media companies up here. So I did that for 7 years and finally decided that I was just a little bit tired of climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak, and wanted to be able to make decisions about my own definitions of success and kind of what that looks like. And so I spun off on my own, started freelancing, and eventually launched my own company where I do brand strategy, website design, copywriting, and overall small business consulting for the most part.
Ah, I love your story. And actually, it's so interesting. I've had quite a few conversations on this podcast recently about defining our own success markers. So I love that you've already touched on that.
Yes, absolutely. It's just so interesting. When I first started in my corporate job, I remember hearing down the line from someone that I had been placed on the executive track. And I was very young. I didn't even know what that meant. And so first it was, well, what does that mean for me? And two is, did anyone ask me if I wanted to be on the executive track? Like that was a goal of mine. So it is interesting that so many people just assume that we have to follow the paths that have been laid out for us instead of choosing our own. So I love that this podcast is a place where people are really taking the time to think about what is it that will actually make them happy and what is it that success actually means, which is actually very tied to people pleasing and overthinking. It's like, well, if I change the definition of success, will someone be mad at me?
Yeah, that's so true, actually. And it really does take it into that message, that question around why am I doing this? And those reasons being selfish, but selfish in a good way, you know, actually deciding what we want.
Exactly. We have our society in general and as women have placed such a burden on the word selfish. And it's just such a negative thing that we've taught it to be. And really, a lot of times it just means making the best choices for you and your life. And that isn't a negative thing at all.
100%. And it's an interesting conversation altogether, actually, because I think the people who are starting businesses and are currently in business, they are doing that for a reason. And, you know, that reason will be tied to a purpose, you know, something that they want to do, something that brings them joy. So I think it's a really interesting conversation how, you know, even as business owners, we know that we're doing something for us and, you know, the impact that we're going to have. But obviously that people pleasing and other things that we've kind of been conditioned to do and to think still pop up, don't they?
Absolutely. And it's really hard to unlearn them. Another thing that I talk a lot to people about is unlearning the definition of humility that we've been taught. It's all interconnected because I find that my clients really bristle at the idea of sharing their experience and credentials because it feels like bragging. And that's all tied to people pleasing because, oh, if you're bragging, then you're full of yourself and what will people think of me? When really we have to talk about our experience and our credentials and the projects that we've done in the past and the awards that we've won as a way to help give people the information they need to decide whether or not to hire us. But those things that we've been taught are really problematic in running a successful business. And so even though I set out originally to help people launch their businesses with their branding and site and everything, I've realized that so much of this unlearning is actually a huge part of what I have to help business owners with as well, almost by accident.
Yes, I've found the exact same thing. That's so interesting. I was helping people with their marketing, but what was coming up time and time again was actually being able to communicate why their best clients have the best chance of creating the results with them. And actually, when I ask people that question, there's very few people that can answer that with conviction, and actually even with objective conviction as well, because some of it will just be objective. But yeah, I definitely find that that's the thing most people seem to struggle with actually communicating that message.
You're so right about the objective facts. I've spoken with several clients, even in the past couple of weeks, where they push back on sharing objective facts about their trajectory. I had one that has worked with huge companies, like we're talking like Condé Nast, Marvel, like really big companies. And I was like, okay, well, we need to put their logos on your site as like past places that you have, you know, used your services. And they were like, is that dishonest? Is that bad? And I remember just pausing and saying, but did you work there? Did you do good work there? And they're like, yes. I was like, well, then I'm not really sure where the disconnect is. It's an objective fact that you have experience at those companies. It's very strange to me. People that don't want to talk about awards that they've won, which is an organization literally calling out your work as saying it is award winning and worthy. Why don't we tell people this?
Yes, absolutely. It's so true. And I, you know, a lot of that, as we've already kind of highlighted, is around what we've been conditioned to. You know, even I often talk about how certainly in it, where I grew up in the UK at school, we were kind of taught to do the entire opposite. We were taught to blend in. You know, in the UK, we all wore the same uniforms and literally we were supposed to blend in. And it's really quite difficult, isn't it, to break out of that. And it's almost, we're going against the grain, aren't we?
Oh, that's so interesting. I went to a very stereotypically American high school. So, you know, you can picture that from the movies. But there is definitely an element of trying to not stand out so that you don't get picked on and just trying to, like, you know, fit in with the crowd. It's a through line from schooling all the way through to university, to our careers. Something that I remember being told a lot was keep your head down and do good work and the rest will just sort of work itself out, which I understand where advice like that comes from. If we focus on doing good work for ourselves, for our clients, there's a lot of things that do come naturally, but it's the keep your head down part of like, let's not make any noise. Let's not rock the boat. Let's not draw attention to ourselves. That's where it becomes problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this has just got me thinking as well. Do you think it can be challenging for some business owners, especially with that people-pleasing tendency, because in sort of childhood to young adulthood, we are always getting that external validation as well. You know, we keep our head down, but we do exams, you know, we get qualifications, we get a degree, and we're constantly getting external validation. And then when we start our business, perhaps even some of this overthinking comes in because somebody isn't there telling us, you've done a great job there.
Anna, are you reading my diary? Because that is exactly a huge part of what's happening. It's just so fascinating because you're right. We have this through line all the way through our lives of having places where we can know if we're on the right track. So yes, it is external validation of you're doing a good job, but that validation was confirmation. And so I think that's where some of the people pleasing and the overthinking starts to overlap, right? So, you know, I was in the gifted and talented program in school. That was my first kind of indication that, yes, I'm on the right track. Getting good grades, I was on the right track. Even in corporate, they would have annual performance reviews, and it's on a scale of 1 to 5. I knew if I was getting a 4 or a 5, I was on the right track. And then I started my own business, and there was no one to tell me what I was doing right or wrong. There was no one to pat me on the back other than feedback from my clients or validation from people on social media when they're liking or commenting or whatever it may be. And it leaves a major void of feedback, especially when we've been conditioned to rely on that external feedback and external validation to tell us you're doing a good job, keep going in that direction, or change course. And now suddenly we have to rely internally on those things, which we are completely out of practice in doing because we've never really had to.
I totally hear you. And actually, I mean, when you actually think about it, it's a real challenge, isn't it? I mean, not only does it take a certain level of resilience, that it's challenging in so many ways, but equally, I don't know about you, but certainly from my own experience, I've never experienced as much personal growth as I have in the time that I've started my business.
Oh, absolutely. Because you have to face these difficult conversations and these difficult decisions and thought processes, or else you won't succeed. Whatever the success looks like, you'll get stuck in your own stuff. So if we're using overthinking specifically as an example, we're all familiar with the phrase paralysis by analysis, and it's a phrase for a reason. It happened to me for a little bit, and I finally had to embrace another phrase, which I really love, which is do it dirty. I don't know if that's one that comes across for you, but it's very much in the same vein as done is better than perfect, because I encounter people almost every day that say, I've been thinking about doing this thing for a while, or I have been researching different ways to do this, or, you know, I started my website, but it's not quite right. And this has been the case for weeks or months or even years, where they're sitting on something that they want to start or put out into the world, but they are terrified of putting it out there if it's not perfect. And one of the problems there is that perfect isn't real, that you're always like one edit or one research or one piece of feedback or advice away from perfect. Kind of like, you know, people say tomorrow never comes, because when tomorrow comes, it's today, right? It's that same sort of feeling. And so our overthinking, paired with a lot of times our perfectionism, will keep our business from moving. And so back to your question about personal growth, you have to get to the heart of those things that are keeping you from moving forward. And so you're really forced to take a hard look internally.
Yeah, I love that. And actually, what you've sort of touched on there as well is actually something to consider. And it can sound a little bit harsh, but from a strategic perspective, let's say if we're talking about content here, let's say social media specifically, if perfectionism is stopping us from posting consistently, then the message just isn't going to get across enough. You know, people do need to absorb our message to learn that we are even for them, or that we can help them, or that we have a solution to their problem. And that just isn't going to happen.
Right. I mean, it's true for anything that you're going to put out there. If perfectionism is getting in your way, it's getting in your way, as simply said, right? You have to look at the cost. I am someone who strongly believes in excellence. And part of that hard work that I've had to do as a business owner is learning to untangle excellence from perfectionism, because there is a fine line where I have to decide as a business owner and as a service provider where I draw that line. And that has been a constant discovery and shift, because I can provide excellent work that will take me X amount of time, but if that starts to bleed into what I have to deliver is absolutely perfect, then not only am I doing myself a disservice, I'm doing my potential client a disservice. I'm doing my actual client a disservice because, to your point, they're getting less content, they're getting less support because I'm spending so much time on perfecting this deliverable, whether it's social media content or something I'm actually delivering to a client. And I feel like that is the key for a lot of perfectionists and overthinkers, because there's a misconception that I believed for a long time that, okay, well, if I don't do things perfectly, I'm compromising on my values of delivering excellence. And I've really had to convince myself that that is not true. And that's simply a story that a lot of us have told ourselves.
Ooh, yeah, that's such a good reflection, actually. And I love the kind of thought process that goes around perfection versus excellence. And it makes total sense. And actually, even the sort of connotations with both of those words are totally different things, aren't they?
Right.
And I think as well, you know, when you've done this yourself, have you started to put some kind of parameters, like benchmarks around things? Because that's certainly something that's helped me a little bit in the past with, for example, my content. You know, rather than striving for perfection, I kind of have benchmarks for excellence in a way that you're saying. But I don't know if there's anything else that you do or anything that you can recommend to anybody who's listening today.
That is a great question. I feel like I should do more benchmarks. I think I'm at a place where a lot of it is trusting my intuition, to be honest with you, of how aligned I feel. Meaning there's something that I've been working on personally that I hesitate because I don't know that I've ever explained it to anyone, of trying to understand where an action is coming from and how I feel in my body when I'm doing it. So if there's a sense of like anxiety or desperation or stress kind of hiding underneath under the surface while I'm working on something, I can usually tell that the people pleasing and the perfectionism is behind it. That there's a sense of striving of like, I have to get this right or else. Even if I don't say that out loud, that's kind of where the feeling is coming from. If I feel a sense of peace and alignment and excitement on creating something great, then I know that I haven't crossed over into that place where it's starting to be harmful. So I think my own benchmarks are just making sure that I'm very in tune internally with how I feel under the surface while I'm doing something.
Ooh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, tuning into the feeling. And I mean, that's always a really great indicator, isn't it? It's literally our subconscious, isn't it, telling us. And I think, yeah, when you're, especially if you're creating, you're going to know what place you're coming from.
Exactly. So yeah, I've just been really, really on the lookout for this underlying feeling almost of anxious desperation is the best way that I can describe it. It's like an uneasiness. Like if I don't get this right, something bad is going to happen. Even if it's not that tangible, it's a feeling that reflects that. And that's how you know that you're not coming from a good place. That's how you know that the people pleasing is taking the reins of the project. And that's really where we have to learn to take control back, because who wants people pleasing or overthinking or perfectionism or whatever word it is that you feel most drawn to that is the most problematic in your business? Does anyone want one of those things making the decisions in their business or in their life? Like, I think most people would say, no, like they want to be the ones making the decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's such a good point, actually. And actually having that awareness of who is in control in that moment, I think that's huge. And I think if you continually become aware of that, you start to develop habits as well, don't you?
Yes. Yes. The habits take longer. I'll just be frank. But it all starts with the awareness.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's actually a really great tip for anybody who is listening to this episode and does struggle with overthinking and allowing people pleasing to influence what it is that they're doing and how they're creating. Is there anything else? Because I do think there are other things as well. I don't know whether you agree, but for me, and certainly in the past, consuming other people's content too much had a negative impact on overthinking everything for me. Do you have sort of any tips or any suggestions for anybody who does consume a lot of content and then finds it difficult to then communicate their message?
Anna, once again, I feel a little bit called out. Consuming other people's content when I moved into the online business space was actually the first time in my life that I felt any imposter syndrome. I never had imposter syndrome in corporate or at university or in any of the places where, I don't know, I felt okay. And then I moved into the online business space and started my own thing and started seeing all of the things that other people were doing and doing things that I hadn't heard of, because the way that marketing operates in small business and in corporate is oddly very different, at least in the way that we talk about it. And I remember thinking, I am going to fail, because I had too much information. And so I think that that is my number one piece of advice for people that are feeling unsure and stuck, is, you're right, to consume less, to be mindful of your inputs in multiple different forms. So not only who's and how much content are you consuming, but who are you going to for advice, and how many people are you going to for advice? Because having too much information is another one of those things that leads to paralysis by analysis, because now we have to sift through all of the information that we've been given and decide which one is the most important, which one is frankly garbage, which ones are helpful for maybe someone else, but not for our specific business and line of work and offerings. So it isn't really helpful at the end of the day. But touching on another problem that is tied to all of these is procrastination. And what a lot of us do when we are feeling stuck is to feel the sensation that we're moving forward, we consume more to feel like we're doing something and we're making progress because we're collecting information. It's very similar to, I don't know if you've heard of the phrase procrastinating. I saw a post on Threads the other day of someone saying, what if we do a cleaning service, but it's just a bunch of writers who are on a strict deadline? They will, as a copywriter, I really feel that. Like, they will clean your house better than anyone because they're trying to feel productive without actually doing the thing they need to do. And a lot of times, that's what happens to us in business. We fall down a rabbit hole of researching something, or we're scrolling through Instagram, consuming content that's educational and feeling like, yeah, look, I learned so much more, but actually we haven't moved the needle at all in our own business because we're stuck. So it's really insidious, because the thing that's making us stuck is the thing that we turn to get unstuck. And then it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah, that makes total sense, and something that I can definitely relate to in the past. And yeah, and actually, I think it also, that problem kind of amplifies in business, in my opinion, because I think, again, you know, we don't necessarily have people telling us that we've got this deadline and, you know, telling us the activities that we need to do.
Yes. Oh my goodness. It's the reason why my own stuff in business gets kind of kicked down the line, put on the back burner, because it's the only part of my business that doesn't have a deadline. Client work has a deadline because I've given them one and I refuse to miss it, but my own work doesn't. And so it really takes focus and dedication to get to a place where the stuff actually gets done. So you're absolutely right. And there are a few people that have expressed to me that they would love to start their own businesses, but because they know they really struggle with managing their own timelines and deadlines, that they feel like they wouldn't be successful in it. And that's also a good awareness to have as well. Not everyone is cut out to be their own boss, to be running their own business. And that's also okay. Just as like a little side note of, you know, there's this myth that if you can't hack it in the online business, there's something wrong with you. But some people are meant for more traditional jobs, and some people are meant to figure it out on our own, like we're doing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you there, actually, because I think as well, something that I know to be true for me, I feel like committing to your own personal growth is really necessary. And that's not something everybody has to be doing all of the time. But I feel like if I hadn't been ready, or I didn't want to commit to my personal growth, then I don't think it would have been for me.
Right. I joke sometimes that the best investment I've ever made in my business is to have a therapist, because she's not giving me business advice, but as we've talked about through this whole episode, is a lot of times what we need isn't business advice. What we need is to unlearn some of our own problematic habits so that we can be more successful in our own businesses. Because the business stuff we figure out, a lot of us are working in our zone of genius. We're doing things that we're naturally good at, but it's all this other stuff that gets in the way.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? And I think regularly, certainly for me, regularly checking in with why I'm doing this and the vision, the bigger picture, I find that that can really help me.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, always checking in to see, like, why am I doing this? Why am I like this? And how can I learn to be less like this? So for me, that is a constant reminder that done is better than perfect, like we talked about. And I share that a lot with my clients when they're just afraid to put something out there. Because one of the biggest fears I had, especially early on, was that every decision that I needed to make in my business was permanent. Even if I maybe wasn't putting that exact phrase on it, that's how it felt. And I felt this weight of making the right decision until I realized that there's no such thing. And that business changes so much that the best advice that I can give someone is to make the best decision that you can with the information you have at the moment, and then give yourself full permission to change your mind, to adjust, to change directions, to slightly change course, because you're going to need to. Almost none of the decisions that we make early on in our business are going to stay the same a year, 2 years, 3 years in. So I have that conversation a lot with people that are branding. Like, well, what about when my business gets huge and then I have to expand into other places? And I'm like, well, you're just launching. We will cross that bridge when we come to it. We're going to do the best branding we can now, the best website we can now, with what you know to be true. And I really feel like that is the first step of taking control over the overthinking and the perfectionism in particular.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, the focus on the now. And I'm sure, you know, you can probably relate. I'm the same as well. I think back to my journey in business and year one, entirely different to where I'm at right now. So yeah, I think focusing on that, what's right in front of you is such a great piece of advice.
Right. I'll give an example because this is one that I think a lot of people deal with. Right now, it's me and I have a few contractors. And because a lot of my work comes from referrals and I was moving from corporate where I had built up a reputation of excellence, of respect. So I used my name for my business. My business is Susanna Bowie Creative. I threw the word creative on there because, well, I guess it's a business, right? Like, but I picking a name for my business kept me from launching it for months because I was like, well, I have to have a name to file the legal documents and to get the domain for my website and to get all sorts of things. And I was so afraid that I was going to make the wrong decision because I couldn't decide whether my business should have a name that was my name or not. Until I finally got to the point of, okay, well, let's just choose the path of least resistance for now. And as things evolve, maybe down the line, we will rebrand. If things get larger, if you become more of like an agency model, whatever it may be. And simply realizing that I was allowed to give myself that permission to change it later was the piece that needed to shift for me to be able to move forward. And so I'm still not sure if I made the right decision. Things are going pretty well in business. I don't know that it has anything to do with my name. I still haven't decided if I'm going to change it or not, but that's okay. I made a decision and I moved forward, and I would give that advice to pretty much anybody who's in the same spot, because it's oddly, that's a very common question for service providers of like, what do I name my business?
Yeah, I totally hear you there. And I love that reflection actually. And I think that's a great piece of advice. And actually it ties in nicely to a question that I ask all of my guests, and that is, what does building your business on your terms look like for you?
Oh, well, it changes. When I first launched it, it meant not living my life in the margins of my job. So I felt like if my life was a book that was being written, the words on the page were my 9-to-5 job, and I was having to fit my relationships, my social outings, time with family, traveling as notes in the margins of the book. And it started to feel really suffocating to me. And I realized that it wasn't aligned with my values in life, which are more tied around family and community and personal growth and relationships and things like that. And so that was originally why I launched it. And that still remains true. But now that I've been in it, my sort of versions of success look like having the freedom to organize my work around things in my life. So I've spent more time with my parents who are in poor health and they need that support. And just the fact that anytime they need me, I could just pick up and grab a flight and go to where they are and potentially work from there, but give them the support. It seems small to some people. It's not, you know, a designer bag or a yacht or anything like that. But to me, as the only daughter, that is the epitome of success. I don't know that many people that have the freedom to be able to give back to their parents in that way. So I think that would be the best example of why I do what I do. It's given me more time to be the type of person that I've always wanted to be.
I love that. Actually, what a way to end that with, it's allowing you to be the person you want to be. I mean, that if that isn't a reason, then I don't know what is. And yeah, I can totally relate as well to just having that freedom really to choose what you do with your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I have extended family in South America. My mom immigrated here in the 80s, married my dad, who's from the US. And so she has a giant family in South America. And when I was starting my corporate job, I'm going to tell you something that's probably going to make your skin crawl since you're in the UK. But for the first 5 years of my career, I only had 10 days off a year, including like I had to use those days for the week between Christmas and New Year's. Like it didn't even include that. So I went 8 years without being able to fly to see my family because it's one of those types of trips that you don't do if it's less than 2 weeks long. And so I kept saying, okay, maybe next year, because my family lived in a different place. I was in my 20s, also wanted to see the world. And so that sort of also led to this feeling of, I feel like because of this one thing that I liked my job, not to be unclear. I just felt like I was having to choose and to not see the people that I really felt like I needed to see. That you're right, choosing what we do with our time and realigning our own priorities, which is deeply close to that, to me is the main reason that I do what I do and why I feel like I'd have a hard time going back to corporate. Though I always tell people, I reserve the right to change my mind. If an amazing opportunity comes up, you know, okay, maybe we'll think about it. But if you ask me right now, I feel like this is it for me. What about you?
I'm the same, yeah. I can really actually relate to what you were saying as well about kind of the page and you're sort of having to fill everything around. I felt, you know, I was restricted. I felt like almost claustrophobic, if I could describe it. You know, when I did work in corporate and, you know, now for sure, you know, this freedom of doing what I want. Also, actually, I thrive off the challenging nature of business as well. I actually like being tested every day with something new, which I had in a different way. But I actually prefer the way that I have it now. But yeah, totally the freedom to choose how I'm spending my time, what I'm doing in that time, and, you know, being able to do things that connect to my bigger why, my mission, and, you know, without anybody sort of telling me that it's their mission.
Absolutely. But can we talk about people pleasing again for a second specifically? Because when I quit my job, it came up in a big way because people had a lot of opinions about me quitting my job because they viewed me as having a very successful future in the corporate world. And so when I decided to resign and do my own thing, it was made very clear to me by many people that I was throwing away my career and throwing away my future and making a bad choice. And it was really hard. I hadn't learned what I've learned in the past several years about people pleasing at the time. And it was really hard to see people that I looked up to and had learned a lot from feel disappointed in a choice that I had made. And I don't know about for you, but from a people pleasing perspective, the fear of disappointing someone is, I think, for me, even bigger than making someone angry or mad at me. I can deal with someone being mad. Having someone be disappointed or asking questions about my character is what can completely stall any sort of progress that I'm making personally or in business.
Yeah, I absolutely hear that. And I think, yeah, and I can relate to that as well. And I think it's taken me some time to kind of accept that not everybody understands the decision that I made. And that's absolutely fine, as I don't always understand everybody else's decisions.
Yes, that is a very mature way of going about it. That, and that has to be the way that we think about it is, well, it's my decision and it's my life. They don't know what's going on behind the scenes necessarily. And that applies to pretty much anything I think we do in our business. I was working with someone actually this week, and we were talking about how they have been afraid to share their real opinions and stances about things publicly. Like, they're like, I'm doing some things sort of behind the scenes, but I'm not talking about my stance on things or my opinion on things because I'm worried about what people will think. And we got to the point where I said, okay, well, what happens if you're just open and honest about your stances on things and someone doesn't like it? If you really feel strongly about the thing, do you even want to work with someone who's going to be upset by seeing what you believe on your website or the way that you operate on your website? In fact, it actually is going to help a people-pleasing mentality by letting those people self-select out of your orbit. And that way, the way that I was finally able to convince her to be open with what she thinks is to tell her that essentially the website would be having her hard conversations for her, instead of her having to over and over again explain to people what she believes, why she believes it, and potentially open herself up to conflict that she doesn't want to have. Whereas if we're open with it and transparent, sometimes it just resolves things for us. And really having to explain that shift in perspective to people that are afraid to ruffle feathers, and that it can be a really beneficial way to go for many business owners, has been a recurring theme in my work. Have you seen that?
Yes, absolutely. And I love that reframe. I love the reframe that, you know, it's having those hard conversations for you. And I absolutely agree. You know, ultimately, we want to attract the kind of people who align with what we're talking about and how we do things. So yeah, I totally agree. It's doing that work for us.
Right. It's so funny. They're like, but what if someone gets mad? Like, well, do you want to work with that person anyway? No. Then what are we worried about? And then the look on their face of like, oh, wait, that's a really good point. Hang on. I'm worried about angering the people that don't even matter to their business, right? So that is a place where I definitely see people pleasing come out the most in marketing in particular.
Yeah, me too, for sure. I mean, this conversation has been brilliant. I think it's definitely something that I could talk about with you all day, because we're very aligned, it appears, on a lot of the views. You know, we're seeing the same kind of things come up, and we can also bring our experiences in there. But yeah, I just want to thank you for taking the time to come on my podcast to chat with me about what I believe to be such an important conversation.